This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
When it comes to behavioral analysis and criminal investigations, there's one thing we know for sure. Patterns don't lie, but people do. And in the Delphi murder case, the patterns of behavior, deception, and decision-making don't just raise red flags. They practically set the whole case on fire. We now have a jailhouse confession that was ignored, a prosecutor who may have buried critical evidence, and an investigation that seemed to conveniently steer away from all of the obvious suspects. All while the man now sitting in prison, Richard Allen, insists he had nothing to do with these murders, even if half of the allegations about missing evidence, investigative bias, and alternative suspects are true. Just half. In this case, it isn't just about solving a crime, it's about how law enforcement handles high-pressure cases and whether tunnel vision can lead to catastrophic mistakes or even worse. So who better than to break all this down than Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Robin, looking at the behaviors of both the suspects in this, law enforcement in this case, does this look like a legitimate investigation, or does this look more like a textbook case of tunnel vision gone wrong, or is it beyond that? Are we into new territory where this can't be tunnel vision anymore? Too many coincidences.
You know, I really wish I could put a label on it, because all I see is chaos.
Yeah.
It's really chaotic, you know, and when you can't figure, I always have a rule of thumb when approaching any kind of situation, any kind of human being, any kind of engagement where we're analyzing. If you can't figure it out and it seems really complicated, that means there's a lack of transparency someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And because human motivations are really, really simple and predictable. And that is, everyone is always seeking to act in their own best interests, so their own safety, security, and prosperity from their own point of view in their own context, which is deep empathy. If you understand that point of view from someone else's context in life, you can then predict their behavior. When you understand that life arc and you get data points from the time of their first formative years, they're in the ages of rough 9 to 19, and you start seeing how they decision make and the choices they're making, it's following an arc, a mm-hmm. pattern. And then every decision along that pattern, they think they are acting in their own best interest, including, unfortunately, in some cases where violence starts escalating, it follows that pattern. And what we've seen multiple times here that you and I keep covering and a lot of other people are covering is Richard Allen's pattern of behavior of life did not follow he committed these murders. Now, granted, he might have. He was accused of it. He was convicted of it, and he's in prison for it. But it does not follow that pattern of behavior, because the number one thing they used against him was his own confession. I want to really reiterate this a lot. Confessions derived from torture are not admissible. He was tortured.
Mm-hmm.
The way he was treated, I mean, think about the Geneva Convention. Can think about all these things we think about when it comes to torture. Guantanamo Bay. All these things, when you put someone in isolation, the psychological torture they're under, plus the fact that he had some psychological issues before that, as is reported, anything he says is, eh.
Yeah.
It's the same reason. So think about this. If you want to do a kind of compare and contrast, because some people say, well, he admitted it. Get over it. He's guilty. Yeah. Well, torture or mishandling psychological things put on you, polygraphs aren't admissible in court either.
No.
Because it's a behavior. It's a physiological response to outside stimulus that the machine is measuring no matter what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And so even polygraph examinations, truth detectors, are not admissible in court. So why should this confession? That's why we do investigations to follow the arcs of pattern. And then you have these other two individuals who fit a pattern behavior. They had contact with the subjects. There's confessions in jail. There's all these other things that follow an arc that makes sense. Not saying they're guilty or innocent, but that say we need to look here instead of someone's life that doesn't fit that arc. That's where there's weird chaos going on.
And also where we have a pattern of behavior is with law enforcement in Delphi, covering things up, lying about it. Was it the sheriff or the chief? Somebody just stepped down in the last couple of weeks because of another case they were caught lying about. And if we go back further, I'm doing a whole piece on this, on the history of Delphi and their issues, and there's a lot of them. It follows a pattern of covering things up to protect this ecosystem of certain people in there and ignoring blatant evidence, the Ron Logan evidence. There's a ton of it. We've gone over it ad nauseum. And you have the Keegan-Klein evidence. We've talked about that ad nauseum as well. Neither of them ever charged with anything. Keegan-Klein is away on child porn charges, like the upstanding individual he is. But he never was charged with anything to do with Delphi, even though they were monitoring him. They were monitoring him using the username Anthony Shots, trying to catfish and solicit little girls to go meet him somewhere. He was even communicating with one of these girls to go meet him somewhere the day of the murders. And somehow, the Delphi investigators, the Delphi authorities, looked the other way. We have another one, and this is the new bombshell from this week. It is the supposed confession letters that were disseminated out by Ricky Davis, who was a cellmate with Ron Logan back in 2017, back before we had Richard Allen even on the radar. He wasn't even a suspect. He wasn't even in the mix at this moment in time. And they don't really have anybody other than a lot of interest in Ron Logan. And the FBI is saying, Ron Logan, look at this. We're going to go in and invade the house, and we're going to raid it, and we're going to get all this information. We don't know what they ever found because, well, Delphi shut that down and shut all that information down. But you have a confession allegedly from Ron Logan with information to Ricky Davis that no one else would have known, only the killer at the scene, because these things were not disseminated to the public yet, specifically the murder weapon, the box cutter. We did not learn it was a box cutter until 2024. No one did. But he was talking about it. Ricky Davis, who was in the same cell as Ron Logan, who's saying, Ron confessed to me. He has these details. He even ties in Keegan-Klein into the whole situation as well. And he says, letter after letter, ignored. Nothing seen by McClelland, the prosecutor in this case. Now, when you send letters out of prison, they're scanned. They're looked at. They get into some sort of a database. One would hope that they still have evidence of this if they ever got out of the prison. And that's the first question, because the defense of Richard Allen is saying, okay, you would have had these letters, Mr. McClelland, and if you did, you did not turn them over in discovery, because that you need to do that. It's rules of discovery. And if you did not do that, you are basically hiding evidence that could very much exonerate Richard Allen. The big question is, did he have those letters? McClelland, as of this recording, has not responded yet. Simple yes, no. Do you have them? Nothing. Just skirting around the issue, not saying anything at all. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about jailhouse confessions. Obviously, this is a letter not directly from Ron Logan, but from an inmate that was next to him. How much credence do you put on something like that? Especially with a guy that says he has nothing to lose. He's not there asking for leniency on his sentence. He's even offering to wear a wire if they didn't want to look at the letters. Let me wear a wire. You can hear him tell me these things. And they said, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, so jailhouse confessions and information like that, it will always have credibility issues, obviously. Sure. But again, but it's data points. And it's congruent data points. There's so many congruent data points pointing to someone other than Richard Allen. That's why and to me, I still have highlighted right on my notes here. You know, to me, when March in 2017, when the FBI executed a search warrant on Ron Logan's property because of the probable cause that they had, that to me said a lot, because that is, it's not because it was FBI. I want to be very clear on that. It's because it's objective outsiders. You know, everyone in life needs a loving critic, because a lot of all of us, as good as I am at behavior analysis, my wife is my loving critic, because she can be objective for me. If I'm emotionally attached to the outcome I'm seeking, I'm not going to be as good as I could be as I am for you, Tony.
Yeah.
You know, because I can be objective for you because I care about you, but I'm not tied to your outcome. My wife does it for me. That's why when we have critical cases like this, especially if it's going to be a small town, especially when we might know everyone, like you were saying, having someone with an objective outside optic looking in, given that insight, that's what the FBI does when they come in on most of our cases. We come in as objectivity, as a resource to give that kind of viewpoint. That's what they gave in this affidavit, in their search warrant. Ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I think there's a lot of really, really messy, horrible things going on there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.